Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 129, Peaches and Paisley, Friday, July 22nd, 2016. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Today's episode features the following segments: The Back Porch, Ever-Expanding Skill Set, and so forth. I'd like to send out a special welcome to PT Knit, who is Jill from Georgetown, Maine, and she introduced herself on the welcome thread. Thank you so much to everyone who has been in touch with me and who has been participating on the Ravelry boards or sending personal messages. It is very gratifying to receive those and to know what pleases people about the podcast and what makes them think and motivates them or inspires them. So thank you so much for that. It has been very, very hot at Yin Hu and in Northeast Pennsylvania over the past couple of days, with no sign of a break in the heat in sight. And the phrase heat dome is being used to describe the excessively high temperatures. So crafting has been a bit of a challenge. Yin Hu doesn't have any air conditioning. It's under a really lovely and deep canopy, so it stays cool when temperatures get high, but once those high temperatures persist, the canopy serves to sort of insulate the house inside that heat dome. So it's been a little bit of a challenge, but I have managed to continue work on some of my projects. And today, I actually spent the day with my mom canning some sweet and sour pickles with her. On the back porch are two projects that have been in the works for quite a while. One is the Agatha Socks by Claire of New Hampshire Knits. These are finally done and they are so beautiful. I thought the pattern was the perfect level of challenge for me, and I'm very pleased with my yarn selection, which was some BFL sock yarn dyed by Jinx Yarns, which I purchased at the Super Summer Knit Together in 2014, and I've been saving for just the right project. And the color is Sea Salt Ice Cream, which is a really cool light turquoise green blue. It's kind of a chalky color. It's really perfect. There's a little bit of tonality to it, but nothing to interfere with the beautiful lattice design in the socks. So I'm so pleased with those. And I'm also pleased that I finished my biggest tour de fleece project that I had set up for myself, which was to spin 4 ounces of a wool silk blend. And this wool silk blend is 40% silk, which was challenging for me to spin. It drifted apart. I had a little bit of trouble when I was plying with my singles, breaking quite a bit. It may have had something to do with the humidity and things sticking to my hands as I was working, but I had to patch the plies together in quite a few places, and I didn't get the consistency in the plying that I had hoped for. But I just kept going. I just kept spinning. I just kept plying. And I ended up with my personal best for 4 ounces, which is 599 yards. So I was very, very pleased and surprised with the yardage after really making mistakes about my estimates several times in the past. This is a beautiful color called June Greens, and it's lovely greens and golds. I think it will just be beautiful knit up. I think that hand spun yarn, when it's knit up, is just really magical. And a lot of the imperfections and inconsistencies just make the knitted fabric even more beautiful. So I think it's going to be great, and I think this is going to be a gift. So those are the two completed projects for this week, and I've been thinking about what to cast on next. I am trying to reach a goal of 5K by the end of August, and I have 600 yards of Riften from Jill Draper. I picked this up when I visited her studios during Rhinebeck this past year. It's 600 yards of a beautiful singles yarn. I think the weight is about a DK weight, but it's the kind of thing that can be knit on rather large needles, because I think the singles need a little bit of room to look gorgeous and to show off the gradient. I've been thinking about what project to knit with this yarn for quite some time, but I haven't made any commitments. My friend Mary Beth, with whom I attended the Jill Draper open house, also purchased a cake of Riften, and I think we will be making the decision about what to knit together, since I'll be visiting her in Pittsburgh for a few days this coming week. So I look forward to deciding on a pattern. We've been kind of talking back and forth about something that might work, and I'm bringing my Riften and all of my needles, and I hope to cast on that project during my visit. Ever-expanding skill set. Last episode, I mentioned making drinks with farm fresh produce, and I mentioned switchel and snops, and I also posted some photographs on Instagram of those two beverages, and several people commented that they had not heard of one or the other or both of those. So I thought I'd devote just a little bit of time today giving some very basic information about snops and switchel. And in the show notes on yarns@yinhu.com, I will leave some very helpful links in case you're interested in learning more or preparing these for yourself. Switchel is a non-alcoholic beverage. Of course, you could make the base and add alcohol if you wanted to turn it into an alcoholic beverage, but really the purpose of switchel is to be thirst quenching and to provide a kind of electrolyte boost. Bon Appetit has an excellent article called Why You Should Be Drinking Switchel, and they talk a little bit about the history of it. It's also called Haymaker's Punch. It's something that's really excellent to drink during hot weather or when you are sweating excessively and you're just doing something and you have a lot of exertion. Carol of Foster Sheep Farm mentioned that one of her relatives, she thought, used to drink it hot, which surprises me because I've always thought of it as a refreshing drink, but maybe it's a good restorative if it's served hot as well. It's made with apple cider vinegar, sweetened with maple syrup, and it often has ginger in it as well. The recipe I used calls for juicing ginger with a juicer, and I don't have a juicer, but I found excellent success grating the ginger as I normally do over a fine microplane type grater, and then mixing all of the ingredients, so the apple cider vinegar, the grated ginger, the maple syrup, and I also used a little bit of grated lemon rind and lemon juice, and mixing all of that in a blender and then pressing it through a very fine mesh strainer. in order to extract all of that ginger flavor. Someone else mentioned that she didn't have a juicer and she let all of the contents sit together after she whizzed them up in her blender. She let them sit overnight and then she pressed the mixture through a strainer, hoping to get even more of that ginger flavor. That's it. That's the base. And then typically water is added to make it into a beverage. So that switchel mixture is diluted with water. I've been diluting it with just plain seltzer water to give it even more of a kind of sparkly, refreshing boost. You could use ginger ale, but it already has a bit of a sweet flavor, and too much sugar sort of interferes with the other electrolyte properties, I feel. So it's nice for it to be really tart, almost bracing. I've made a few batches of this so far this summer, and I store each one in a pint mason jar with a tightly fitted lid in my refrigerator. And then when I want to prepare some switchel, I just use a tablespoon and I scoop out about 3 or 4 tablespoons of the switchel mixture. And then I just fill a glass with ice and water or seltzer. The Bon Appetit article encourages readers to source the very best ingredients they can find. And in particular, I think that Bragg's organic apple cider vinegar is the perfect vinegar to use for switchel. It has a kind of effervescence to it and is a very high quality product. So I would prefer this to something like a Heinz apple cider vinegar, something that you might use, that you might just have had in your cabinet for like ages. Try to source the very best ingredients for this drink because I think it really does make a difference in the flavor and the feeling you get from drinking it. I learned about schnapps by reading an article in the recent issue of Taproot magazine. And when I posted a photograph of my schnapps macerating in a mason jar, someone asked if schnapps was the same as schnapps, S-C-H-N-A-P-P-S. And this is a kind of very syrupy, sweet liqueur, the kind of thing that may have been pushed way to the back of the liquor cabinet, the kind of thing that can give you sort of an instant headache upon drinking it because it's just so filled with sugar. Schnapps, on the other hand, is just an infused alcohol. It's not sweetened. And so what's really being encouraged is that the liquor you're using, most often vodka, is taking on some of the flavor properties of whatever it is that you immerse into it over time. And sometimes that amount of time might be just a few days. Sometimes it might be months and months. And the article gives several suggestions for mixtures or combinations to try. And one of them was peaches and whiskey. And so since we have beautiful fresh peaches at our farmer's market, I thought I would give that a try. So I diced up some ripe but not overripe peaches. I took out the peach pit. I took off the skin of the peach and I just diced the flesh. And then I also threw in a little bit of a chiffonade of pineapple sage that I have growing in my little potted herb garden. And I submerge those in a glass, a pint mason jar. And it's important to keep any fruit or produce below the level of the alcohol. So I just put, since I had a wide mouth mason jar, I just put a small mouth lid and I just pressed it down until there was about an inch of headspace of the whiskey over the top of the peaches. And then I close the jar up tightly. It's important not to have a lot of air. So I filled the jar almost to the top and then I screwed on a lid and as instructed, I put it into a cool, dark place. I did this on Monday and I tasted it yesterday and just got the very faintest sensation of peach when I tried it. So I think this is going to take quite a while for the infusion to really take hold and become noticeable. I assume that these types of infusions are more successful when you use vodka because it doesn't have any flavor to begin with, or not much of a flavor. And so anything that you are infusing in a vodka, then you would be able to sense that probably within a few days. But I think with the whiskey, it's going to take longer. So I'll let you know how that turns out. In the meantime, I'm just checking it every few days and it looks very beautiful in its jar, but it's not something to be stored on a pretty shelf. It needs to be cool and dark and tucked away. Another beverage that I've been playing around with a little bit this summer is horchata. And I think I will reserve a complete discussion of horchata for a future episode, but I will link in the show notes to a little Instagram video that caught my attention. I think it was put out by Bon Appetit. I'm not certain, but it's a video that just shows how to make it. And essentially, it's a creamy coffee beverage that is completely dairy-free. And the creamy, milky texture that you get in the beverage is created by using rice, uncooked rice. So it's really kind of a magical drink, and I've been playing around with different variations on that theme as well. And so forth. I have been working on a few sewing projects this summer, and with this excessive heat, I really just don't feel like modeling them to show them off. But I think what I will do tomorrow morning is to bring my dress form, Gertrude, outside into a sunny spot and have her model some of the things that I've been making since the beginning of the summer. One in particular that I just finished today is the Endless Summer Tunic. It's a pattern by A Verb for Keeping Warm. And last Thursday, I visited my mom and I had this pattern. I had purchased it online. I like to work with the paper versions of patterns, so it came in the mail. And I also had some very lightweight denim and some cambray fabric. And I talked my mom into making this pattern along with me. So I had already created my own pattern. And then when we were together, we created a pattern for her by tracing her size and cutting out the paper. I made some adjustments in my tunic because I wanted to extend the length a little bit since I'm quite tall and pretty long-waisted. A lot of dress or tunic type things end up very short on me, and I wanted this to be long enough that I could wear it as a dress. On Wednesday evening, just before I was about to visit her, I got an email notification from Creative Bug that they had a new class, How to Sew the Endless Summer Tunic. So that evening, I watched the entire tutorial, and then when I went over to my mom's house, she watched the tutorial and I listened in. And then we cut out her pattern, we cut our fabric, and then we watched the tutorial again and she took notes. She just made a few basic notes on her pattern, just the steps she was going to take. She's a very accomplished seamstress, so she didn't need a copy of the pattern or anything. She's like, nope, I got it. So she actually completed the sewing on her tunic before I completed mine, and I saw it when I visited her today for the pickle making, and it came out really well. I was almost done with my tunic, and then I finished it this afternoon when I got home. So I think this is a really graceful and versatile pattern, and I thought that I would use some time in this episode to give it a little bit of a review, as well as a review of the tutorial on Creative Bug. The tutorial is mostly the domain of the pattern's designer. Her name is Tasa Gleason. There's a little bit of an introduction from Christine Vejar of A Verb for Keeping Warm, and then she introduces Tasa, and Tasa does the rest of the instruction. She speaks very clearly, and I think that the filming of the Creative Bug tutorial has come a really long way from some of the earlier versions that I've watched. There's much greater emphasis on focusing the camera, showing the very small steps that are involved, and the sequencing of the steps I thought was very good. In a few places, I thought there could be a little more of an explanation. As we were watching the video, my mother was providing a lot of background information and little tips and tricks that I was noting down that weren't really covered by the video. I don't think those things are necessary in order to complete the pattern, but they are very helpful. Especially there were some tips my mom gave in terms of how to make an extra line of stitching when you sew in a pocket so that the pocket stays in the front of the garment and doesn't have such a tendency to flip back behind you. So if you've ever had the feeling of putting your hands in your pockets and your hands are sort of going to the back of your dress because the pockets are flipped around. So little things like that, I think there was a bit of oversight, but overall it was very clear and very informative. I think the garment itself is quite flattering for a feminine figure. There's shaping that doesn't involve making darts. In the case of the back and the waist shaping, this comes in the form of four pattern pieces for the body of the garment rather than the usual two. I think that most intermediate patterns for a dress or a tunic have a front and a back. And that's great because it's very easy and you don't have a lot of pattern pieces to cut out, and you can cut something out on the fold, and that's nice. And this adds a little step of complication when you work with two pattern pieces for the front and two for the back. Certainly if you're using a printed fabric, this can be a challenge because those things need to be lined up. But overall, what that does is creates a lot more drape and shaping in the dress. And it's much more flattering than just a front and a back piece without the complication of figuring out where the bust darts should go so that it looks natural, or how to do some back shaping so that the back pulls in a little bit at the smaller part around your waist and then is a little bit fuller around your hips. This does this very gracefully. There's also a kind of a drop hem in the back of the dress. And the main feature is a yoke and some gathers in the front of the dress, which has a V neckline. This requires that you could use more of your main color fabric, but it's interesting, I think, if you use some contrasting fabric. And my mom and I both chose paisley fabrics. She had some stash paisley that was very, very pretty. And I cut into Liberty fabric that I had purchased in Vermont, and I use that for the yoke facing and also for the pockets. It's very light and it doesn't add a lot of bulk to the dress, especially the pockets, which you want to be nice and thin, but it's really special and very pretty, and I felt like it was just the right match with the cambray fabric that I had selected. One of the things that the tutorial goes through is how to make a pressing template so that you can get a nice even edge along some of the seams of the garment before you stitch it, particularly the neckline. So Tasa Gleason has the instructions for using a piece of oak tag or an index card and drawing lines to indicate 1/4 inch and 1/2 inch to make a pressing guide. And then you insert that paper and you use your iron to make sure that you're getting just the right amount of fold before you pin it and sew it. And I thought this was interesting because one of the very first purchases I made after getting a sewing machine was a product my mom recommended and one I always remember her having on her sewing table. It's called Easy Hem. It's also called a tailor's guide. This tool has a couple different names. The one I purchased comes from a company called Dritz, D-R-I-T-Z. It's available on Amazon for about $10, and it's a piece of thin metal, probably stainless steel because it's had water on it numerous times and it never rusts. It's a piece of steel with three straight sides and one rounded side. And essentially, it's a pressing template. It has markings for 1/4 inch in, 1/2 inch in. It's rounded on the one side, as I mentioned. So if you're pressing something on a curve, you can use it. And it's large enough so that you can just place it along the edge of your fabric, fold it over, and then run it over with your iron and achieve that consistent folded edge as you're pressing. It seems a little bit counterintuitive that this would be made out of metal because it does heat up. But if it were made out of plastic, it would melt if you introduced the iron to it. And if it were made out of paper, you just need to keep making them over and over again because they kind of disintegrate once they get wet or hot and they rip and tear. So this is a kind of sturdy, reusable guide that's a really handy tool for creating a straight or a curved hem or really any place you need to make a seam and iron the fabric and fold before you pin and sew. So once again, that's Easy Hem, E-Z-Y, Hem, H-E-M, and it's put out by Dritz. The kind of tool it is, it's called a hem gauge if you're looking for one online, and it also comes with markings in inches on one side and centimeters on the other. So it's very useful whether you're using imperial measurements or not. There's a lot of hand stitching in the Endless Summer Tunic. At first, I was a little bit frustrated by this level of finishing, but once I completed the tunic, I came to see why that hand stitching was so important because there's really only one bit of stitching that shows on the outside of the garment, and then, of course, the hem stitching. And I think that allows the simplicity and beauty of your fabrics to shine. And it also brings a little bit of a meditative quality to the sewing of this garment. So there's hand stitching around the bias armholes. There's hand stitching along the back yoke and then at the shoulders for the yoke as well. What I think is the most difficult aspect of making the Endless Summer Tunic is to complete the gathering and sew it down in a way that creates even gathers across the seam. There's not a lot of instruction in the tutorial about how to make sure that these gathers are even. And after my mom sewed her version of the tunic, she encouraged me not to make gathers across the entire shoulder portion, but to leave about an inch along the neckline that didn't have any gathers at all, and then to put all the gathering in an even smaller space. So this required quite a bit of time, like I would say 15 minutes per shoulder to run the stitching and then to create the gathers and then pin them into place exactly the way I wanted them. She mentions that you can press the gathers, but sometimes that flattens them out in a way that's not really helpful. So that I think is the most challenging, the most intermediate part of the Endless Summer tunic. Once I've completed the pattern, I've already thought about fabric that I would use to make another one. And I think that lengthening the tunic by 2 inches was really successful and didn't interfere with the overall shaping of the garment. In a future project, I might even extend that lengthening to 2.5 inches. To do this, I drew a line at the narrowest part of the pattern pieces on the front and the back. And I made sure that the line, the horizontal line I drew, was exactly perpendicular to the grain line on the pattern piece. And then all I did when I put the pattern piece on my fabric is I measured down 2 inches and I pulled that pattern piece down so that it was 2 inches lower than it had been. And then I continued to trace my pattern piece. There's a little bit of a place along that 2 inches that you sort of need to connect the dots and just gracefully shape that line so that there's no jagged edges. But overall, that's pretty easy to do, and I think that resulted in the perfect length garment for me. I made the size 39-inch bust because it's recommended that you go up about 2 inches from your bust size, and my bust size is between a 36 and a 37, so I just traced the size 39. When I make this tunic again, one adjustment that I will make is to taper the top closure on the side seams so that there's a little bit more of a seam allowance, that I allow a larger seam allowance the last 3 inches below the armhole. I feel like it flares out just a little bit there. It's not something super noticeable, but I think if I taper that and take it in just a little bit more, that would be a better fit under the arms. You can check out the show notes for this episode and you will see my version of the Endless Summer Tunic, as well as a few other garments that I have made since the start of the summer. These will be modeled by Gertrude, my dress form, and I look forward to your feedback or questions about them if you have any.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, flowery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. just like Linda Cousins, but I don't know why. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider joining the Yarns at Yunhu group on Ravelry, leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes, or following me on social media. Music for today's episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.